You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Thursday's episode of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am your host, Craig Fowler, drafted in at the last minute after Robert Borthwick had to vacate the space due to work commitments with Studio Something / a very, I don't know if I should actually say, a very famous brand in Scotland. Let's just put it at that.
Yeah.
Lucky him.
I am joined, of course, by Amy Canavan.
Hi, Craig.
And if you could devise from that noise, Ewan Taylor.
Hello.
Right, guys, like I said, drafted at the last minute, so this might be a bit slapdash, but we'll see. I've seen two games this week, and I've read extensively and watched the extended highlights of another one, and watched Sports Scene for the rest. But I wasn't expected to do this, but here I am, and here you are. Mm-hmm. And we shall begin with the, well, I was going to say the most eyebrow-raising result of the midweek. It probably still, actually, maybe you could say the Hibs was, but maybe the nature of the victory in Dundee United's 4-0 win over Kilmarnock. Or was it? Because, Amy, are Kilmarnock just shit?
I don't want to say that they're not the best side, but in the first half against Dundee United, they were absolutely dreadful. It was a terrible, terrible, terrible performance. In fact, I would just say the first 30 minutes in particular, before the triple substitution from Derek McInnes, which was a masterstroke.
Only lost 1-0 after
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. It genuinely, I do say it in jest, but it did really change the game. And Derek McInnes was a very honest man. Again, in his post-match interview, and admitted, you know, and apologised to his fans because they did get it wrong. I'll give you a wee clue, Derek. If you're dropping your informed player, Danny Armstrong, I think that's going to have a part to play. But yeah, they were just terrible in that opening half hour.
So what was the triple change?
So Ryan Alibuso went off, and I really, really, really like him. I think he's been a very good signing, and you know they won't have him for long because he's just on loan. Jordan Jones and Blair Alston all came off, and Danny Armstrong, Rory McKenzie, and Jack Cameron up top came on.
Ennis Cameron.
Who's Jack Cameron?
No idea.
Don't know.
Oh my God! I went to uni with him.
Oh, that's
who he is. So, okay,
might as well have better after Jack Cameron.
You're looking at me as
I'm sure he's a Kelly fan as well.
You give me a look there as if to say, you're going to edit this out. No,
absolutely not. I would watch him. Anyway,
there's a restricted formation as well.
It's more was me just going, who then is Jack Cameron? Have I just made someone up? No, I went to uni with him. Right. Anyway, it did change the game because beforehand, you know, in the goals that Kilmarnock...
Sorry, just to wind back, was there a change of system as well? Did he depart the three at the back, or was it still the three at the back?
The three of the back did shift. It did change. And to affect... Because it was just horrendous. You know, the goals it conceded on the edge of the box, the gaps the vacancies just in and around the area. 11 for, I thought, Glenn Middleton. I was really impressed by him. And again, he's one of those really hot and cold players, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, like if he really plays well, he will set the Heather alight. And other games, he can just go missing. But when he likes to turn it on, he can be quite the player. And I thought he was really, really impressive. A lovely link-up play with Jamie McGrath for mm-hmm. Jamie McGrath's goal. Sort of like a 1-2 little flick on, deflection, a parry out from Zach Hemming, who, again, I don't exactly think covered himself in glory all evening, particularly for the first half. Mm-hmm. But I do have concerns about Kilmarnock now. I do. Because Dundee United, I think if you asked me 24 hours ago, just thought they're definitely going down, because Dundee United of late have just been really rather rank to watch. After that sort of false hope probably given by the Aberdeen victory. Mm. But then again, then they pull something like this out the back. But Dundee United only win in darkness. Dundee United only win at night. So they
haven't won a game. What was it? I saw this on Twitter. Or was it, in fact, it might have been on our Discord. The last time they won a game at 3 o'clock on a Saturday was in April.
So thankfully they're playing at 6 o'clock. They had the 6 o'clock game on Saturday night as well. So
just to remind everybody, it's November 10th.
Yeah, they're not a fan of the daylight. Hmm. But yeah, I think it was a proper basement battle, wasn't it? Hmm. And it's one of those that could properly swing either side season, but then again, it might just fade. Dundee United might just fade.
I got faith. I do have faith in Dundee United.
That's the thing. I just have less faith in Kelly. I don't think I necessarily have faith in United.
Yeah, that's probably a good shout. But I worry a little bit because there is still the kind of, and I know it's hard. It's weird to say after a 4-0 defeat, but after a 4-0 victory. But it was the same after the previous 4-0 victory. They just kind of went back into being a bit crap. And I do wonder whether there's just a kind of general malaise around the club that tends to happen. Typically, to Dundee United, actually, like a few times, at least twice in my life. Like, if you think about the team in the 90s, that was far too good to get relegated and somehow did. And then Jackie McNamara's team, which was definitely not far too good to get relegated, but everybody before that season was picking it for, you know, mid-table, you know, possibly even top six kind of finishing. Yet
it was just fun as well.
Yeah just
fun,
an absolute tailspin. Uh-huh. And
I know this team is
I do think there is a lot of talent in that side. Yeah. McGrath's a good player at this level. Levitt's a good player at this level. Fletcher has been pretty good signing so far.
Mm-hmm. If you deploy Fletcher correctly, which is taking some time to do so, if mm-hmm. you just let him be the target man and not have to do an awful lot else, you know, then he's going to be a decent player for you. It's when they're trying to chuck him out, and, you know, chuck him out wide rather, not just chuck him out, chuck him out wide, and, you know, you're not only not getting the best out of him, you're not getting the best out of Tony Watt or Jamie McGrath either. And Dylan Levitt took his goal really, really sweetly mm-hmm, last night as well. It's a really, really sweet finish. Like, the Glenn Middleton free kick will get all the chat and the attention, but the Levitt finish is lovely, and mm-hmm. that's the worry for Kelly, because that all comes from trying to play out from the back, trying to build. Kerr McInerney's totally dispossessed.
Well, Kerr McInerney playing at left wing back is a strange decision to begin with, and he's completely missing for the opening goal with Jordan Jones as the man tracking Kieran Freeman.
You
did not want to be in that position. I think I saw somebody on the Kelly film say that Jones doesn't have a defensive bone in his body, and that's probably quite accurate.
Correct. Yeah.
His best move was walking off. You know,
he looked nonplussed.
And exactly, you know, like Blair also went off, like there was a bit of a huff and there was a wee bit of a jog, and I think
he's a borrowed type. Like, if I'm talking about Dundee United at this level, saying they've got these players, and you could even mention guys like Ryan Edwards, a good defender at this level. Ross Graham had a good game. I'm still not sure about his kind of full credentials, but Craig Sybil is kind of proven himself at this level. There's a number of guys in that team. You look at the Kelly team, and there's a lot of guys.
Very disjointed.
But it's not just that, because it was very disjointed, but it's also a bunch of guys, you're like, are they good enough for this level? And I wouldn't say McInerney is necessarily one of those, because I do think he has the ability.
In the right position.
But there's guys like Blair Alston. Is Blair Alston in 2022 a Scottish Premiership player?
No, Blair Alston will score worldies against Rangers, and that is it. That is what he's done his whole career. But those are starting to dry up a bit. Maybe if Rangers got relegated and he was, you know, playing the Championship, then I'm sure he'd score a couple.
Oh, please, could that happen again?
Let's hope not. I think that the whole team is... I mean, Kelly were not a great Championship team last season. Obviously, they won the league, but they weren't great. Ash Taylor made a big difference to them, and he, you know, and he is a Premiership player. Did they bring in that many Premiership players over the summer? I mean, you know, I know Alan Power has his fans in this podcast. I'm not one of them. He's okay, but you know, if he's your sort of midfield linchpin, then you're in trouble. Liam Donnelly's
foul for the free kick as well. Like, how many people will have made money for Liam Donnelly playing a crucial role in a Dundee United?
Well, somebody's made money at Liam Donnelly as his agent, and he's deserved every single penny.
But he scored like 5 penalties at the start of a season once, and he's made a whole career.
He's not any good. Yeah. What is going on? Bizarre. Why does McInnes keep picking him?
Bizarre. And yeah, it's like, obviously Daniel Armstrong's in a good form at the moment, but I mean, I'm afraid if I was a Gillie fan, I think that's probably his good bit of the season.
Yes.
I think we've had that. That's his hot streak. I'm not sure that's going to continue.
Christian Doidge is finished as a top flight player. Yeah. Ennis Cameron is not a top flight player.
Yeah.
Jack Cameron might be.
Jordan Jones. Yeah, I mean, it could be. He's just not had the chance yet. And then Jordan Jones wasn't great for St Mirren last season, and has been, you know, basically since he went to Rangers, he's not really been great anywhere. So if that's, and I know a lot of Kelly fans were saying, I think once we get Jones into the team and Armstrong, then we'll look a bit better. And they did have a wee bump when mainly based on Armstrong's form recently, but
I think it's a real struggle. Away games for Kilmarnock this season.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Like, it's not ideal. It's very similar. It's similar to St Mirren. They're terrible travelling woes, but even at home then, St Mirren are very good at home. Mm-hmm. Very good at home.
Kilmarnock are not very good anywhere.
No. Kelly are okay at home, but okay at best. And if you're just relying on half your games being okay, and then that's a real worry. It's tricky, because then again, looking at the substitutions, like, I'm not a Rory McKenzie huge fan, but Kelly fans are. So if, like, I don't see it, maybe it's because I don't invest my time watching Rory McKenzie.
Works hard, plays for the badge.
Perhaps that's it. So
fellow lawyer now, apparently.
Really?
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's done a law degree.
That's English why he was on the bench to start with, because he was too busy doing that.
Yeah.
English law? Is that like arresting people for getting there and there wrong?
No, you can only do English law from the Open University. So,
all right, okay.
We have a different legal system up here.
Yes, we do.
So we have Scots law.
Scots
law for journalists.
It's only a book for uni I think I've held on to.
Well, there you go. Good.
Even though it'll be massively out of date by now. Yeah. But just to remind myself about defamation every now and again. Can I say that? Well, oh, no, not at all. I'll delete that tweet.
Yep.
Uh-huh. He's going to phone you in.
But
now I'm a tennis lawyer.
We do. But I'm very expensive, so I wouldn't advise that.
Can't even do us a solid.
Get on Liam Donnelly's agent.
he's done his English degree, or he is doing it. I think he's done it, but it was on the Kelly website this week. Joins the fellow footballers like Stuart Armstrong. He's got a law degree.
Yeah, no, I know.
Jerry Britton was a practicing lawyer.
Referee he's Kevin Clancy class. Does, doesn't he?
Kevin Clancy is a partner at a big law firm.
He better not be. He's not like an attorney and like.
He is in court. Yeah, he does really? Court stuff. Yeah,
I would never believe him. Yeah, well, he just looks scared all the time.
He's not criminal law, but he does. I think he does like licensing.
All right, okay. So it's not.
So he has to argue.
Right, if it was criminal law and he was like, if he was trying to tell me that his client didn't do it, I would just look one look at his face and be like, you're hiding something here. You're terrified. You know something.
Well, yeah.
And the exact same moves with the prosecution. I'm like, you know this is made up. Well, I would just never believe his face.
I know it was a red card.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Right.
Yes.
Let's move on from the chat about lawyers.
Indeed.
To. No, there's no link for that. No. St Mirren 2, St Johnstone 2. And, actually, somebody on the dock after this one was Stephen Robinson. Because as well as St Mirren have done this season, the home fans weren't happy with his kind of negative tactics and the team's negative tactics in trying to close out this game. He made some substitutions to take off some attacking players when they had St Johnstone pinned back. St Johnstone, who, by the way, had a man sent off.
Yeah.
And were away for home and were losing.
and not playing very well. And Arthur Johnston.
Yeah.
And he took off a couple of attacking players. The players started taking the ball into the corner, and they eventually got punished 6 minutes in injury time, mm-hmm. where Nicky Clark, who I think we've kind of said it already on Monday, but it has to be restated once more, one of the signings of the season so far.
Yes.
Silly people who said that he wouldn't be a good signing for St Johnstone. I don't know who those silly people are.
I don't know. I've always rated Nicky Clark.
Were you one of them?
Especially when he was Rangers.
No, but I'm 100% sure that Ewan was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I checked right. back the group chat. No, I never. No, no. You definitely
I
did
I probably
say,
would have said that,
I'm
yeah.
sure you did.
I think we all made fun of it. They paid money for Nicky Clark. It looked ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know, I was just going
genius, apparently.
No, I watched this game. I worked this game. I took, like, you'll respect me for a second, fella. I had the Celtic game at the weekend and had St Johnstone yesterday for my match report on the whistle. Mm. Furious. Because not only does it go from, like, St. Exactly, it's like, oh, St Mirren win, they come from behind, woo hoo hoo, to 10 man St Johnstone claw back. Mm. And it's just. And it was through a great goal as well. So you want to watch it, and then you're like, "Oh, I've got a thing to write here."
As I often tell people when they ask about my job and stuff, and being impartial, and I'm like trying to say there is a certain amount of fandom that kind of leaves you because of Hearts. It's different, obviously, if we're playing Hibs or Celtic or Rangers or, like, it's a really big game.
I hated Celtic from the 89th minute at the weekend. Yes. Hated them. Despised them.
But if you're... If I have a report, especially if it's a midweek game where there's literally a deadline and it's not just a case of, oh, this was a bit late for reasons. Like, it's literally the desk need it in as soon
printing
as possible.
Is happening. Yeah,
yeah. And Hearts are 1-0 down.
Stay down.
Right. And we've got a corner. Like, don't score. I don't care. I need to file this. It's all written. You have my empathy and sympathy.
Mm. Went from like a tight 2-1 with Celtic to a 2-2 ridiculous Dundee United comeback, then 3-2 win, and then a 4-2. What the feck has happened?
Unfortunately. Yeah. At least with BBC, you won't have a word count, will you?
No, but we have a weird thing that, like, the top four paragraphs have to fit in, like, a certain size. There's, like, a box sort of thing. I think it's, like, 16 lines or something like that. And it has to sort of, like, fill
that would
yeah.
be
so
a
it's
pain.
As good as. So you can't just, like, oh, quickly change that, revert it, and then we'll go and fix it. It has to, like, fill that sort of, like... Fox, basically.
For print, it would have been even worse because then you have to describe the Abada goal as well.
Exactly. You have to break it down. I can at least then just chuck it. Okay, there's two quick goals from Kugel and Abada. But last night, yes, Nicky Clark's aerobic overhead kick.
I would say, as 96th minute overhead kick winners go, this was quite a bad one of those. But it's one of those overhead kicks where you just sort of sits down.
It's a
better ball. I think it's a nicer ball.
Does it even qualify as an overhead kick?
Yeah, yes. I want him to be
an
airborne.
Is it not just more of a kind of
it's Nicky Clark. See, if it was Kugel, I would say no, but it's Nicky Clark, so let it happen.
Like, it reminded me of Bilal Mosny's overhead kick against Stenhouse Muir back in the day. He scored as he was sitting down, and it was just one of those. I was expecting them to be like airborne. I wanted Nicky Clark to like his foot to be like above the crossbar type of thing. It wasn't that. So I was slightly disappointed. O'Hara's goal though, that was a good goal.
Yes.
Mark O'Hara's goal was worthy of winning the match, and I understand Stephen Robinson's frustration there because that is an absolute peach. It is a cracking goal.
But was he too negative?
Stephen Robinson, I did say that, you know, their very evident plans of running down the clock faltered, capitulated. Mm-hmm. You know, it was dreadful. If that is what you're trying to run down the clock for as long as they were, you know,
opportunity is there to just go kill it.
Exactly. It very much was that was what they were playing for, you know, and you had even Mark O'Hara up in the corner trying to run down the clock. And I know that Stephen Robinson doesn't think that there should have been that much time added on anyway. Obviously, the amount of time added on is the time it took for the red card decision, which is worthy of a mention because, again, that was just... this was my game in the office, and rightly so. People are going, right, me, well, then what's happening? I'm like, I don't have a clue. Because he was Alex Mitchell is shown a yellow card by on-field referee Ewan Anderson. And I thought it was just a yellow. I did, you know,
nah.
he goes...
Nah, I agree with you. I saw Ewan's chat in the Discord. I agree with you. I thought it was a red.
I saw... he goes sliding in. It's a slippy surface, and I understand it's maybe a little bit high, but there's not. I don't think there's a lot of intent.
I think it lifts his foot.
I think it's like the, you know, like you sometimes, oh, you tried to pull out of that. You did the opposite. You tried to pull in. Yeah, like, you know, he was in. He'd already gone through the tackle, and then
push
he was
in,
like,
baby.
Yeah, pushing. I suppose pull out, push in.
You can't pull in.
No, you
can
cannot. No.
Yeah.
Well, you could pull something in.
Somebody else. Oh, yeah. So.
But that doesn't really make sense in the context of the tackle. Anyway, I like to see. So anyway, he was through the tackle. It is a slidey surface, but what you don't need to do then is lift your, once you've already sort of won the ball and taken the man, to lift your foot into him, which is what he did. So I thought it was a clear. I couldn't believe he didn't give it.
I felt it was slightly harsh. And then it was a few minutes again that, you know, it wasn't then immediately going over to VAR. Like, the yellow was shown, put away, like we were moving on with our lives, and then Ewan Anderson trotted over, and I think it was Mike Roncone, the VAR referee.
It's a new name to me.
And it certainly wasn't a name that I was familiar with.
Not a name that I've ever heard.
Well, Roncone.
I actually thought it was quite weird. I can't remember which game it was, but there was... I know it's been like this all the time, but it was one of the midweek games. They said who the referee was in the studio. Mm. It was like one of our, you know, quote unquote better ones. Mm. I just kept thinking, the thought just occurred to me, why does it have to be the better ones in the studio?
Yeah.
Like, surely anybody who's qualified enough to referee the SPFL at any level can watch clips over and over again and come to a decision. Whereas surely you just want, why are we taking six of our, well, the exception of Mike Roncone? What was his name?
Mike Roncone, I'm sure.
Roncone.
Yeah, exactly. It's a new name on everyone.
Yeah. Like, with the exception of him, it's usually like guys we've all heard of, guys who referee the top flight. So why are we taking them away from the pitch and putting them into the studio, wherever the hell they are?
Yeah.
2TV.
That's
yeah.
No, I better not give the address in case punters want to go and smash up the VR screen. but I document this QCV, so I'm safe for now. But that wasn't also the only decision. The first half decision, oh my goodness, for the penalty, that was an extraordinarily lengthy VAR decision.
For one that is...
for blatantly obvious.
Yes. Evident right away that it was a penalty.
Evident right away. And I totally understand Stephen Robinson's frustration there, because, as you say, that shouldn't take that long. It simply shouldn't. It's not, and I don't want to go over old ground, but or, you know, suggest that I have a bias. But if Alexandre Bernabeu's at the weekend is a penalty, you know, then the ball there on Scott Tanzar, you know, that's a flying trailing arm. You know, it's not just an arm out. It's well, that's not within his body shape, I don't think, anyway. Yeah. And eventually, of course, then the right decision was made off of Dre Wright's sort of chipped effort in towards the box. But it took a ridiculous amount of time for that penalty to be awarded. And that's when it's a real killjoy. Mm-hmm. Because that should just be...
It's a fucking killjoy, anyway.
But that's just a blatant penalty. And if an on-field referee can't see that, then that's concerning as well. Because the linesman has a great position. It's between you and I, Fowler. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's at that area as well. So it's not on the other side of the box. It's his side off the box. It's right there. It's a flying arm. Yes, the correct decision was eventually made, and I know that's what we should all be happy with. But I think when it takes so long, that
you'd
is...
You'd rather have the wrong decision quickly than the right decision after, like, it takes 5 minutes.
Yeah, no, I don't care enough to... Because especially, like, with so much stuff, it's the same arguments over and over again. Let's forget about that.
But St Mirren's home form, still very, very strong. Good point for St Johnstone away. And again, and it keeps them so tight, you know, that's still level on points, only separated on goal difference. And I think it'll certainly keep the momentum up with St Johnstone that they've gathered. And, you know, they're just playing really, really well right now. And while maybe against St Mirren that wasn't one of their better performances, because I don't think it was. I thought St Mirren were very, very much in control before St Johnstone did get that goal, but they're able to grind stuff out.
I think they found the right balance in defence as well, and I think that's a bit surprising coming into the campaign, but I think that balance means Liam Gordon doesn't play in the team.
I was just going to say,
because Alex Mitchell is better. And
again, without Liam Gordon,
neither Mitchell nor Gordon suit playing on the right of the three.
Yeah.
Whereas Ryan McGowan very much does, and Andy Considine has made a living out of doing it on the left.
Yeah.
And even when they went down to 10, you know, losing Alex Mitchell, obviously St Mirren, then dominated the ball, but it's a wonder goal that does put them ahead. St Johnstone were very resolute, and if you actually just turned the game on, I don't think you probably would have actually noticed that they were a man down, other than you would just maybe have thought, yes, St Mirren are just, you know, dominating as the home side, which they are doing against many teams at St Mirren Park.
A team that dominated but didn't get any points, let alone three, was Aberdeen, who went to the Tony Macaroni Arena, slipped into a two-goal deficit inside the first 15 minutes and couldn't claw it back. And yet again, our old friend VR had a wee part to play.
Handball mania.
Yeah.
It was great.
I think they're all penalties.
Yes, they are. I mean...
Two of them are just because they're shite bags.
Yeah, two short kings trying to protect their wee faces. Cowardly. Very cowardly. Barron and Holt, I mean, that's poor. But they're two that nobody noticed.
Especially the Barron one.
Yeah.
Everybody, that's what the reports were for anybody inside the ground. Play goes on for like a minute.
Yeah.
Play goes on, and then Nicky Devlin hauls down Duke. Is booked.
Yeah.
Is booked for a passage of play that really doesn't exist, weirdly. Yeah. And then,
still, that booking stands.
Yes, and they're ready to take the free kick, and then suddenly there's a VAR check. Nobody knows what for. Nobody has a clue. Nick Walsh runs over, eventually gets the word in his ear, stands there for an idiot for about a minute, like the referees have to do, and then runs over again with stuff like this. Like we said, do we have to do the checks for every single one? Or maybe this one he would, but like, so did the referee, Ewan Anderson, did he have to run over to check it?
For both incidents, he went over to the monitor.
Yeah, so like with that one, why does he have to go to the monitor? Why is the referee goes up? By the way, that is a blatant penalty. Just give the penalty.
Yeah, you don't need to see it. Just take the word for it.
Yeah, but he then has to run over, and then eventually the penalty is decided, and then it's only like after the game that anybody inside the stadium, the paying punters, only find out what, unless they go on Twitter.
It's only
after the game, watch highlights, find out exactly what that penalty was given for.
Yeah, it's not ideal. It's not ideal. But I thought it was an interesting game, though. Actually, you know, VAR aside, tactically, I think Aberdeen have a bit of a problem with this back three that they've been playing, because I think there's quite an obvious way to counteract it, and it's by playing a front three against it.
Yeah.
Because McCrory and Scales can't defend one on one very well. And
well, they certainly couldn't against Rangers.
Exactly, and that's what it reminded me of. Because, you know, Livingston had Nibley on the left, Anderson through the middle, and Bambula on the right. And, I mean, with Nibley and Bambula, Mr. Bartendale, you're really spoiling us, because they are great fun.
They're
tremendous.
Same.
Tremendous. I mean, yeah, you did flirt with cancellation on Monday's show by confusing
with another man of African descent.
You did, yes. But now we're established that who he is. He's great. He did a Rabona. But for no real reason.
If he'd actually done a normal cross, he probably would have a better chance of creating a goal.
But he was causing Scales all kinds of problems. Nibley was giving McCrory a torrid time, and it's just that setup where they really. I mean, Aberdeen, obviously, a lot of teams in the Premiership have played like a back three, but a lot of the time, really, it's a back five. Aberdeen really do play a back three because Richardson is high, McKenzie in this game on the left is high. And they are exposed that back three. If you tie up Stewart with a striker that he has to look after, then you know I don't think McCrory and Skills really
play. Is it Bruce Anderson again?
Bruce Anderson,
and he is somebody you have to look after.
Exactly. Yeah. So and Jorn, if the striker, you know, the central striker sort of maybe goes deep quite a lot, then Stewart has to follow him, and it just causes a bit of chaos, and that the rest of the team the rest of the Aberdeen team just aren't particularly well equipped to deal with that defensively. So that was, you know, how the first half started, and Livingston were sort of all over Aberdeen for that section of the game. Obviously go 2-0 up, and then I suppose game state then comes into a wee bit where Livingston have a 2-goal lead, so they're not going to be going great guns, but Aberdeen did come into a bit more. I wouldn't have said really played particularly well first half for any of the first half. But obviously get the penalty at the end, which Miovski misses, and then misses the follow-up. Then there's a tactical switch half-time. I didn't see that McCrory was injured. I think he was just subbed for Matty Kennedy, and Aberdeen went to more of what was, I would say, more of like a 4-3-3, but a wee bit lopsided in that Duke was sort of more of a sort of striker playing off the left, and Kennedy was more sort of a natural winger. And that meant that our pal Bambula had to like run back and try, you know, because that's, you know, then he's having to track the fullback. And the, you know, and Devlin's having to deal with a bit more with Duke. And yeah, Bambula cannot defend at all.
So I also heard their old friend
running after Jack McKenzie. And Jack, I don't think Jack McKenzie's practically going to be really, really dangerous.
I thought it was weird that he started and Coulson didn't. Like, I know, yeah, Coulson's maybe been off the boil the last couple of games, but I still say that Coulson, from what I've seen of both players so far in Scottish football, is a better player.
I would say so. Yeah, that's slightly weird. And I also wonder when Johnny Hayes is fit, if that's going to be his position.
You would think so.
In which case, Coulson, I don't know. Yeah, Coulson just won't be maybe a factor. I don't know. But yeah, so that tactical switch, I mean, Bamble, I think, went off that sort of 60-odd minutes because that just wasn't working.
Later in the game, our old friend Ishmael Goncalves made an appearance and just apparently looked completely disinterested.
Oh, he was terrible. Yeah, yeah. So,
Is he off a gun?
Yes, yes. So, and that, you know, was then a game of two halves, and Aberdeen then proceeded to batter them. And then, you know, obviously, get another penalty for another handball, which is the only one that I think Miowski actually did notice this in real time, but his hand is out from his body, but he's actually trying to foul Miowski in a more conventional way, mm-hmm, and give away a penalty.
The ball just lands on it.
And the ball lands in his arm, and you know, gives away a penalty. I mean, these handball penalties, just in general, it's annoying because you know, if you think of VAR decisions, then you always think of offside, or I think of offside and handball. Mm-hmm. And it's because handball's not exactly, but almost a case of it's handball or it's not in the rules. Mm-hmm. And therefore, that's when the referee, you know, and the VAR officials will give them, and will tell referees to overturn their opinion. Whereas, like, I'm still seeing it, most corners, people are still getting their shirts pulled.
Yeah, that's...
But the VAR isn't pulling that up. And now that is actually intentional cheating. Whereas handball, I mean,
maybe
unless,
have 30 penalties a game.
Yeah, but why not? Why not give them? Because then that's
just so you can have 30 penalties a game.
Yeah,
I want Shacklett to score 20 goals. So,
but yeah,
in a game.
So, yeah, I've got a bet on Shacklett to be top goal scorer this season. Yeah. So yeah, please, 30 penalties in a game.
So, but
Shacklett scores 27.
But that to me is a bigger problem, because basically, unless you're actually, you know, trying to save the ball, you know, like you're a Junga, for example. Earlier this season, when he actually makes a really good save, that's intentional handball. Yes. That's probably the only actual intentional handball.
Really,
oh, it was a great save. It was.
It kind of feels like because of VAR being introduced, that wouldn't have been given initially as well. We'd have to wait for 5 minutes for that decision to be made.
So yeah, so I find that a bit annoying that they aren't more willing to sort of overrule. It's almost like you assume that a referee has seen everything apart from, you just assume he hasn't seen handballs. I find it a bit annoying, because it's not really intentional cheating, there's
so you're okay with unintentional cheating.
If it just hit, if you have your arm, because even the submitting one, which is a penalty, right, his hand is in a natural position, but it's only there for like a split second. It's in a natural position, going to a natural position, but then when the ball hits it,
his hands Alex Mitchell's legs only in a dangerous position.
It is a penalty, but it's like, it's also unlucky, because if Dre Wright doesn't hit the ball exactly, you know, it doesn't basically, you know, try and hit this sort of dangling penalty worm that the Simone player has, hands are, then, you know, you do get players trying to like aim
right, the dangling penalty one.
I stole that from Ken Early, second captains, and there is an element of trying, you know, players maybe, I don't know if in Scotland do this, but at certain levels they will try to hit their opponent's, you know, arms, and if they're out from their body for you know, just that split second, maybe
could be a pretty good player to be able to think, I'm going to hit that part of the body.
I'd say Manny did it in the Champions League.
He fucking did.
Yeah.
Cheating bastard.
That was a penalty.
Manny's not the Tony Macaroni, though.
No, he's not. But, you know, the handballs were annoying me. But as overall, good game. Aberdeen probably, I think they ended up with like over 4 XG. But they did have 2 penalties within that. But they had their chances. And yeah, they should have got at least a draw really out of it. So I mean, it's not a performance I would be massively worried about if I was an Aberdeen fan, other than I do think this back three might be on the way out.
A team that should be massively worried about their performance, and a back three might be on its way out as well.
Indeed.
Hibernian, beaten 2-0 at home by Ross County. I was at this game.
Holy Christ, this first half, this entire game really, but the first half especially, awful, awful, awful game of football. Mm. The second half wasn't really much better in terms of the football played. However, I had a good time giggling my arse off at how raging the Hibs fans in attendance were, at how just utterly insipid their side was.
There's been a lot of rage on multiple platforms after that. I don't think I've seen Hibs rage quite so intense.
I saw a lot of Hibs fans describe it as one of the worst performances
ever
they've seen at Easter Road, and it's hard to necessarily. I mean, there's a lot
stiff opposition.
There's stiff opposition, but in recent seasons, certainly, like you think about the context as well. Hibs not in particularly great form in terms of results, but performances haven't been bad. They should have beaten Dundee United. They should have beaten St Johnstone. Both of them games they should have won really easily, not just in terms of winning the game. They then, I mean, I know St Mirren are bad away from home, but they absolutely stroll all over St Mirren. Mm. And even the Aberdeen game, yes, they lose, and it's part of the old kind of brittle Hibs mentality
playing
thing.
Playing well first half.
Playing really well first half. It falls apart as it tends to do at Hibs. Mm-hmm. This was just shocking. Mm. And it's against a Ross County team that just last month, they went up to the Highlands and played them off the park.
Yeah.
Now, I'll get to County in a second, what they've done to change the team and to change their fortunes, and maybe looking like they themselves might not be the team to go down. I was going to extend that point, but I'll just go back to Hibs for the meantime. They came out in this game and just looked like it was a game against Ross County in the bottom six midweek in May. With nothing riding on it. There was absolutely no intensity whatsoever about that Hibs side. With maybe a little bit in the opening 10, but once kind of Ross County adjusted their shape slightly, there was just nothing. They were so pathetic, really. There was nothing going forward in an attacking sense. And they held, County had created nothing until the very end of the half. Jordan White had a good chance that was cleared, pretty much a goal-denying block from Paul Hanlon. And then they got a couple of corners, and then they scored for one of them with George Harmon scoring twice in two games.
Odd.
Second half, they did raise the tempo a bit after a change of formation as well, which saw them go to a 4-4-2 with Ryan Porteous at fullback. And he was mostly responsible for kind of raising the tempo by charging forward. But as I saw some Hibs fans saying, and I agreed with, he kind of lost his composure a bit towards the end of that game, and you can see that with the second goal where he just goes charging towards it for no reason, and it just allows himself to be beaten far too easily. Mm. And then, yeah, Jakubetti scores with 10 to go. There's still plenty of time to get yourself back in the game, but the place just evacuated at that point, and the only fans that stayed just stayed till the end to boo the players off the park. And then, the piece de resistance. Afterwards, the players done the usual, go around, clap the fans, and the fans booed them back. And
yeah, that's what you want.
Oh!
Lee Johnson with his wee hand up, saying, as if it's his fault.
I orgasmed slightly. It's fucking great.
I thought it was odd how much Johnson, after the game, basically, you know, he was obviously saying, oh, he wasn't good enough, and it's, you know, I wasn't good enough, and you know, all the sort of usual things that the manager tried to say to get the fans back inside. But he also said that, like, he basically focused on purely on crossing. He was like, oh, we didn't cross the ball well enough today, and I don't know, they do it in training, they're really good at it. And I thought that was, I mean, is crossing being that important, you know, to Hibs team playing at home to Ross County, is that actually a good tactical approach?
Against Jakubetti, Baldwin, and Johnson?
I would say no. And actually, is it a good approach? This is also come from a man who has watched his team cross the ball about 1,000 times in the last
what
three games.
What was the stat the other week? 74?
70 odd, yeah. I hate crosses in football in general now. So that comment sort of made me think, hang on a minute. So I'd look at like the stats for Hibs. So this is all like per 90. So in the league, they're ranked third for shots, third for crosses, third for touches in the opposition box, third for corners, so they're second for headed shots. And they're the third in XG overall. Now, apart from an XG where they're a wee bit closer to the sort of pack, and all of those, they're significantly ahead of everybody else, and they're just behind Rangers and Celtic. So they're, you're, and all those metrics, by a distance, the third best team in the league. But then if you look at, and they're also sort of third for possession, again, quite a bit above everybody else. And third for passes and passing accuracy. But then when you get down to the, they're not so good stats. So they're fifth for cross accuracy, which is probably not too bad. I mean, there's not much.
That's all right, especially if you're
okay. Yeah.
For attempts.
Yeah. But they're only the seventh biggest goal scorer in the league. They're ninth in terms of the XG per shot. And they're 10th in terms of percentage shots on target ranked in the league. And I think it's probably, that says to me that they're making loads of bad chances. Mm. And that's because they're just pinging, their whole focus is get the ball wide, get the ball into the box. And it's all headers and all, flashing across goal. And you've got Kukurevic in there who's scored a header, maybe two. But, to me, that's, I think Hibs have players that could be, or should have players. Your Ewan Henderson, who's maybe not fantastic at the moment, but like Boyle and so on, they could create different types of chances. Maybe Ewan as well, who's fallen out of it. He's not a winger.
Johnson came out today and said that the genuine quality players that he has at his disposal, they're on the injury bed. So who's almost not
is that just Kyle McGuinness.
Not
Kyle McGuinness,
exactly.
Kevin Nisbet, Martin Boyle.
That's what he's saying. McGuinness, McGeady, Doyle, Hayes, Nisbet, and McCurdy.
McCurdy is not a quality player.
No.
He came out and said that they were the guys that can make a difference in the final third.
But you're
saying you don't have anyone else.
Yeah,
but they've got loads. They've got fucking loads of players.
Yeah, they've got too many. I mean, they obviously have. Compared to, if you look at the Aberdeen,
that was a laugh. Seeing Yar Tavares coming off the bench as well.
Yeah, that was a good laugh. But yeah, they feel like they've spread their budget too thinly. But I do wonder about Johnson's approach generally. Is that actually going to be the
approach? He's came out again today and said, he gave the young players the chance, and he thought that it was the young players could take to Ross County and deliver something. And I'll be totally honest, I this is not the best journalist, but I looked at the squad, the team rather, and I didn't think that screams a youthful team. And he said I could have picked more experienced players, but I didn't.
So
Dimitri Mitchell off for Stevenson.
It's not like playing the B side, and that's what he was saying, that I gave the young boys a chance, and I thought the young players could have done something.
And the young players, so Kenna, I would suppose, would be one of them. He's been in the team the last couple of games, and he's a summer signing.
Exactly.
And Kuarevich is 19.
This is what I feel with the Scotland women.
Oh my, Melkison played as well, but again, well. So if you play you don't play Melkison, you play Johan instead, which would end up being the strike partnership in the second half.
It's not rubbish. It's not like we saw B team players go guys who have got an under 18 youth league who are maybe he should delve into. It wasn't like that. One of those were leading the line. So I felt some comments today were a bit odd.
Yes,
I could honestly put up a lightning round. Yeah, actually, you can give me 30 seconds on a timer and I'll just go through the Hibs team one by one. And like, what do you do? Right, give me 30 seconds. Right,
go for it.
Let me go through the players. Right, Dimitri Mitchell. Yeah, his missus gave birth, but don't know what. He might have been up his arse in this game because he didn't really make a whole lot of sense. Ewan Henderson, I just don't see what you do, mate. Sorry, you purport to be a really good technical player, but you don't actually affect the game at all. Chris Cadden, can you ever play for an entire game? You're always really effective one half or the other, do a lot, get forward, great chances, but otherwise you don't seem to do much. Elias Melkison, welcome to Scottish football, mate. You've been here long enough. You need to really toughen up. Ellie Youhan, right, God,
that's enough. That's 30 seconds. I just think there's never been a good footballer called Ewan. Yeah, Ewan, shite. Ewan Henderson, shite.
Mm.
Ewan Henderson's not.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, wait. Sorry, I was thinking about Liam.
No, he's good.
He's all right.
I really was thinking about Liam Henderson there.
Yeah, no, Ewan Henderson's shite.
Okay, speaking of... no good link here. Actually, Ewan Henderson's former club.
Exactly, yeah. And Liam Henderson's
and
former
Liam
club.
Henderson's
it was a perfect link. Yeah. That's all that was done
I actually
for.
Keep forgetting. I always just think of Liam Henderson as a Hibs player. I forget that he was at Celtic.
No, I don't.
Celtic won 2-1 at Motherwell. Amy, how does it feel to be top of the league by 7 points and still have everybody out to get you?
welcome the charge. It wasn't a tantalising Celtic performance at Fir Park. And the record against Motherwell, like Celtic have, is unbelievable. It's insane. And speaking about like Dundee United in the midweek, I feel like Celtic haven't lost a midweek game since 2016, I think it's something like that. Like in the Scottish Premiership, of course, don't even talk about Europe, UN. I can see they are waiting to jump down my throat. No, in the Premiership. And yeah, I don't think they've lost Fir Park since 2014, if that's right. But it wasn't anything tantalising. It wasn't Celtic-esque.
I just figured out the midweek defeat, so I just wanted to answer the question. You didn't ask, but I just wanted to... Sorry for interrupting you, but it was a 2-1 defeat to St Johnstone, wasn't it?
I don't know, because I don't care. I actually don't. It's a long time. It could be. I know the game. I know that game.
Because that was the second last game before the season of Dyla's last season. And then Rodgers took over. So it wouldn't have been a Rodgers defeat because that was an invincible season. So it must have been that.
It has to be. Well done.
Thank you.
You closety Tim.
Oh, yeah. That's what they all say on Twitter.
That charge had been levelled previously.
Again, it's not... I don't want to just spend a game speaking about VAR, but it's... We've all seen that camera angle for the disallowed Jota goal, haven't we?
I think we just have to take the linesman who had the best view in the house is put up in here. It was offside.
I think it might be.
I think he probably is offside.
I think he's leaning offside. Yeah.
It's a wonder for the footballing purist. It is a disgrace that goal.
But the thing is, if it wasn't for VAR, Jota wouldn't have even finished because the linesman's flag would have gone up as soon as he touched the ball.
Well, stop being a spoil sport. I just think it's a stunning, stunning goal, and I'm devastated that it's been cut off. But yeah, there has to be better angles than that. Yeah. And I have been assured.
Well, there was. We saw it on the telly. Yeah.
There was.
What was wrong with the lines in that one?
I prefer the screenshot is one from literally Hamilton. I don't know geography if Hamilton's that direction from Motherwell, but let's think of Graham Fulis come at me. Motherwell weren't great. I've seen a few comments sort of come through that, you know, they gave Celtic a real run. If Celtic were more clinical, it could be, you know, Giakoumakis could easily have scored.
I quite enjoyed Kyogo moonlighting as a Motherwell physio.
He does that with every player. He does that with everyone. No. It's not just that was Bevis Mugabe. We're talking about that one.
Yeah, he stayed there for ages. Yeah, and then I was like, oh, did he injure him? And then I like saw the replay. It wasn't even him.
It was Aaron Moy, wasn't it? Who, if Aaron Moy could hurry up and actually score for Celtic, no one is presented with more glorious, glaring goal scoring opportunities.
Oh, that missing against Hearts.
The Hearts one is the pick of the bunch. But again, he had a good chance. Against Motherwell, and he's just not scoring, but who cares, because he's going to a World Cup and I'm not. But yeah, Kyogo, he does that with every injured player. He always goes over, and is it a healing process thing? I don't know. I'll figure that one out.
That's
for
weird.
I think it's Karen
or something.
No, I just think it's Karen. Why does something be weird?
No, I don't like it. Okay, if I'm playing against Kyogo and I get injured, I don't want him in my face.
You alright, mate? Fuck off.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think, like, his English isn't weirdo. Even that great, so exactly. I don't What's know he what saying? He's saying. But I do take quite a vested interest in it, because I just go like, what are you doing?
I know what you mean. I've seen him do it before, but he just hung around for so long with this one. Even once the physio had turned up, he was still there.
Like, they pat each other on the back. It's reciprocated. It's not like, get out my face.
It was like he was talking to the physio, like, giving him his opinion.
Because he kept, like, touching the leg, the knee. Like, is this where it hurts? Like, that's what my dad used to do when you're wee. I've got a bruise. Is that where it is? Bang. Like, how? That's sort of what he does. But I don't see anything wrong with it. What I do potentially see something wrong with is, and I agree with Stevie Hamill here, for the second goal, the throw-in. Have we all seen
that? Oh, well, I have.
We all seen? So, of course you have. Sedhak Savanovic is off the pitch, but the throw-in cannons off him, and then Celtic get possession, save the turn, blah, 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 pings very the ball. Nice. A beautiful, beautiful pass into the path of Maeda. You know, it's a stunning one for Jota to latch onto the disallowed goal earlier, but the Turnbull one is just stunning. It's a
bit of backspin on the pass.
Yeah, it's nice. Just class. Like when the camera zooms in and just follows the ball.
I think that's why Maida was actually able to control it.
Yeah, because it's just him, it's one touch, boom.
Yeah, but
when you actually see it, and it does happen right in front of Stevie Hamill, yes, the throw-in comes off Sedhak Savanovic, who is off the park. Mm-hmm. So really, should the goal stand?
It should be a free kick.
No.
It should be an indirect free kick.
Is that not something that we can do with VAR?
Well, VAR is supposed to go over the whole passage of play, isn't it? Is that the attacking phase? But it's the what is the attacking phase then? Is that just from Celtic, when Celtic? Because I would have thought that that would have to have been viewed.
I suspect they just didn't look at it. Yeah, VAR didn't realise. I mean, I imagine. But I mean, and that's the, you know,
it's a frustrating
human error. But I don't. I mean, I don't think it changed the result.
Well, it could have because then Motherwell scored late on in a mad moment again. It just sometimes you just think, Joe Hart, because you're doing nothing during the game, do you just sort of switch off after 85 minutes? Mm-hmm.
It was a nice finish. From
it was a nice finish, but yeah, it was very, very much a routine Celtic job done, pack up the road sort of thing. There wasn't a lot to shout home about, but the run continues and 7 clear at the top, and I'm quite happy with that.
It'll get bigger.
It could have got bigger.
It could have got bigger. At Ibrox,
One man wanted it to get bigger.
I did. This is the worst case scenario.
His Hearts were defeated 1-0 by Rangers, and what was the worst case scenario for Ewan Taylor, who stated clearly before the game that his preferred result was Hearts to get a result so Giovanni Van Bronckhorst was to get sacked.
7-0.
And if if Rangers put in a similar performance to they did in the Aberdeen game and absolutely blew Hearts away. That didn't happen. Rangers were pretty poor. Hearts weren't great themselves. Mm. Hearts were good defensively. But going forward, they didn't have an awful lot. I think I've seen Hearts fans say like Lauren Shanklin played well, which usually the ones that are moaning about Nielsen. I thought Lauren Shanklin was very poor in this game. Yeah. I think he conceded possession too easily, far too often. Josh Donnelly had the two moments in the game where Hearts really threatened. And I don't want to be too harsh on Donnelly because earlier this season, in fact, until like a couple of weeks ago, I always joked about Donnelly. You could tell when he's going to play well within the first 5 to 10 minutes because if he looks interested, then he's going to have a good game.
He's very good against Celtic.
But he's actually, in the last, probably maybe just do, especially for a winger, over the course of this season, I think he's actually been, especially when he's played in his natural position on the right of a front three. Mm. And not the front three from last season when it was like 2 number 10s. Like, actually, when he's played as a right winger, he has actually been pretty solid, I think, for most of the season without being spectacular. And that's kind of, he's now won that position, I would say, from Alan Forrest. Mm. But he didn't have a great game. Other than those kind of two threatening moments, and without them to play, when you're going to play with a front two away from home to Rangers, you need them to do something, and neither of them done much, and that was kind of Hart's downfall in the end.
Yeah, I think that was Hart's probably approached it in the right manner.
If you're a Hearts fan, then it was Robbie Nielsen being an utter shitebag. Yeah. Should have had a go, should have pinned them back.
Well,
because that's very easy to do away to Rangers, who've lost one league game in 3 fucking years.
Yes, so I think. Because that's what Aberdeen did. Aberdeen had to go and got mauled.
Yes. That could have been 8-1.
Yeah, and that's what Rangers really want teams to do, unless they're better than us. which happened to you, Rob said, don't have a go, Napoli, because we'll struggle with that. But if you could say that'd be great. But Aberdeen, come on, because that's great. And I think Hearts basically was just, it looked to me the plan was sit in. You're trying to use,
but it wasn't just sitting and launch it long.
No,
it was trying to keep possession and trying to frustrate Rangers.
A couple of times that almost backfired. You know, Tillman won the ball maybe a couple of times, but Rangers are just so plodding at the moment that the way to play against Rangers is just try and be fairly stuffy, don't concede early, and eventually we'll do something stupid probably, which we managed to avoid just about in this game, but not for the want of trying at times. Ryan Kent in the first half drove me bananas. He keeps on giving the ball to worse players than him in worse positions than he's in.
When just did shoot. Ryan Kent just last shoot. Play well in the Scottish Premiership for Rangers?
Last
Aberdeen.
Night, I would say last night in the second half.
Second half, he was good.
Yeah, he was good. But
an Aberdeen game, he was good.
Yeah, Aberdeen. He's good. I mean, he can't.
You can ask when he was last time he played well 2 games in a row.
I was just going to say consecutive games.
Yeah, hard ever.
2020.
Yeah, probably. But And that's the annoying thing is, you know, last night showed why he has to be in the team, because he's still the one that actually, you know, ends up ultimately making the goal, and you know, made the other best chance in the game. But I mean, in the first half, fucking hell, he just frustrated the life out of me, and that's where we are. I mean, I don't think he's like down tools. Some people are saying that. I mean, it makes no sense because his contract's up. He's tanking his career.
He's
chucking his toys out the pram. He's
in a contract season, you should be going hell for leather.
Yeah, he's basically saying, instead of I don't want to sign for Leeds, I want to sign for QPR. You know, that's what I want to do with my career, because that's where he's going. I mean, he's going. I don't think you go to a Premier League team playing like this.
No.
You go to a Championship team if he goes to England. So that's what he's tanking his own career.
Similarly unusual approach from Alfredo Morelos.
Yes,
as well.
Indeed. Yes. So they have chucked it. I think they're just playing utterly shite, and I have no confidence whatsoever. And I think the approach doesn't suit Ken. He's not really a wide winger.
Who does this approach suit?
Very few players in the team. Antonio Colak, maybe. Not even really.
What's his XG at these days?
I've actually seen Rangers fans saying he should maybe come at the team and Morelos should go in instead.
Yeah, well, I mean, Morelos was probably better than him last night, but wasn't great either.
He does look a wee bit slimmed down, Morelos.
A wee bit, but I think a lot of people are being...
Just always plays himself into shape, doesn't he?
I mean, well, a lot of people are being sort of wanes about Morelos, I think, because he's just like, oh, he's my favourite player, so I want him in the team.
Mm.
I mean, he's had chances this season. He's not taken them. He could have been in the team by now. He's been fit, in inverted commas, you know, for months now. You know, even since he had his wee sort of fallout and, you know, was didn't play in the PSV UA game. So he's been around. He's had chances. He started games. He's not done well enough. So there's a reason Colak's in the team, because Colak's top scorer in the league, and his performance has been generally fairly consistent. Morelos is. I have not been. So I think he may start against him on the weekend, because he, as I say, he's probably the better of the two last night. But I wouldn't expect him to do much on Saturday. We shall see.
Is this Giovanni Van Bronckhorst's last game in charge?
I hope so. It should be. I mean, it really should be. It's such a good. I mean, you never get this chance mid-season to change the manager, and given, you know, because even normally you obviously do have a winter break, but if you change manager then, a manager comes in, and it's also the January transfer window right away, and he's probably having to make loads of decisions, you know, while still trying, you know, without really having, you know, played any games with the squad, whereas this would be a perfect chance if, you know, say a new manager came in on Sunday, which would be perfect. Please do that, Rangers.
I'm surprised he's not out the door already.
Yeah, I am. I thought after the St. Johnstone game that would have been him, but They're obviously desperate not to sack him unless they absolutely have to. I think probably because it costs money.
A lot of money.
And they must think that...
35 million for the Champions League or whatever it was.
Like. There is money there. I mean, they can afford it. It's just, obviously, ideally you would spend that money on other things than sacking manager. I mean...
Realistically.
There isn't an obvious...
Joey Barton.
Sean Dyche.
Would you really take Sean Dyche?
The man who made Joey Barton.
Would you really take Sean Dyche?
Well, not really. I mean, I think he'd be better than Van Bronckhorst, probably. But I wouldn't. I don't know.
The thing with Van Bronckhorst, I said this on yesterday's record. I don't know if I'll make it to Friday show or not, but it's just the fact that there's so many players in that Rangers team who we know are very good players at this level who have been pretty crap this season.
Yeah. That's the problem. We don't look fit. We don't look. I mean. You know, you can make the excuses you would make from our
injuries.
This would be the main one. Probably been a wee bit unlucky in terms of, you know, I think the league probably could be closer. I think, you know, XG wise, should be.
Oh my god!
Celtic have got 4 points from games that they pulled out their arse in the last second,
but I mean, like the St. Johnstone game, for example, if Dre Wright isn't a fucking idiot, that's a draw. But we've not had a game like that where, you know, a team's been an absolute idiot in the last minute, which would be great if teams could start doing that. So, but the point, this season's gone, so, and are you really going to give Van Bronckhorst
this season's gone?
The league's done, so it is, I mean, it's definitely done. Well, I mean, Celtic win the league by over 10 points. There's no question about it. So, so
Amy's going to need fan down after this.
But, I mean, it is. I mean, I don't even
terrible like, outlook. Yeah,
but it is. But like, well, because Van Brogger's argument of the
was
by
a
the
6 point, 6 well, exactly. points this time last year.
Uh-huh. So that means that yeah, but that's it's up against that team that we chucked a 6 point lead. So it's not. It's actually that's the opposite. I mean, that's not a reason.
So we're
why
now going 13.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
well,
it's actually that's
I'm with you. That's like the yeah. league's at 12.
It's like, oh, this team hasn't, you know, we're up against.
I think
you know,
the league's done.
They've not lost a game in a year.
I think so the league's done as long as Van Bronckhorst is there. Yeah. I don't think it's necessarily done if they sack him now and bring in a replacement, because there's still three Old Firm games.
Yeah, we're not
going to
win all three.
No, but you can still. And you never know. Football changes. So, football changes in an instant. If you're bringing in another manager.
Can do, but yeah, something would have. I mean, the only way would, you say, like, Postecoglou goes.
Maybe there's a dream team style bus crash.
Yeah, Celtic. Hutchers
United style.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that could happen. Callum McGregor is like sniped at Hampden.
Feels like he is right now.
The League Cup final, maybe. Who knows? Something like that happens, then fantastic. But it doesn't seem likely to me at this point in time. And I just think Celtic are in a
poor,
stronger position. So
poor John Black.
I'm not saying so. I mean, it's not like, you know, I don't think it's not irretrievable in terms of, you know, I don't think Celtic are going to be brilliant forever and Rangers are going to be terrible forever. But I think for this season in the league, I think it's pretty much done. So what's the point in bringing in or letting Van Bronckhorst? Are you going to give Van Bronckhorst how does this season go that Van Bronckhorst gets next season?
Cups.
You win. Well, I don't care about the cups.
Oh, okay.
So I mean, I'd rather win them than not, but you know, there's not a reason. You know,
no reason to keep them.
To keep them. So yeah, because if we lose the league by 10 points but we win the Scottish Cup, who cares? Like,
yeah,
that's not a reason to keep the manager. So
well, this time just let the other team win it.
Yeah. We tried.
I want the Scottish Cup. I want the Scottish Cup.
I know, yeah, you did.
So
rubbish for 90 minutes, yeah, but still doing it then.
Yeah. So I just think, you know, what's the point in letting it drag out? Whereas this is a perfect time to change manager, and then you do get a better, you know, a better chance to for a new manager to come in, you know, get his feet under the table, and then and also there has to be so much turnover in the squad. They actually need whoever's going to be the manager next season to be involved in the decision making process in January, because the Rangers need to make a lot of signings in January, not really for this season, but for next season. There needs to be like a long term. You know, so many players are out of contract. There's going to be a big changeover, and I think that needs to start in January.
I think some players should go out on loan, like John Sutter. Stephen Maroon. Actually, don't need them. Toby Subic was fucking class.
Let him get fit first, and then we're not sending him back to where he gets injured all the time. We'll keep an eye on him.
He's getting injured more now. I broke
through. He played one game.
He only had like one bad injury season was now. He's had three so far.
Nah, he's had one. It was just Joe Nubley. Ruined him. He's just not been the same since.
Broke his heart.
Only game.
It's a broken heart he's got. That's need mended.
Talk about Joel Nobley. That's who we should sign in January. Start the
for
revolution.
A £1 million?
Yes. Whatever it costs. Get Bambula as well.
Sorry,
so for
David Martindale's manager.
David Martindale's manager.
Would you take Martindale's manager?
Yeah, there was a poll on Follow, and it like said, if you had to choose, you'd get a manager from the rest of the league, who would you go for? It was like 70% Martindale. And the denizens of Follow.
That's fair to like. I you're not going to take Postecoglou. They're not going to take Goodwin.
Well, they didn't. Postecoglou would be my choice, but he wasn't on the ballot.
Like, you're not going to get Goodwin.
It'd be great if we just went and appointed Postecoglou. Yeah, Goodwin was well. Yeah,
Goodwin's not like as a fan. Goodwin you're had, not going to say, "Oh, I want Jim Goodwin," yeah, are you?
Goodwin had more votes than Lee Johnson. Lee Johnson had zero, whereas Jim Goodwin had like four, which I thought was interesting.
What did Robbie get?
Robbie Nielsen was second.
I would say he'd be second.
He'd have 10-15% or something like that. But yeah, Martindale was the people's choice.
The people's choice.
Right, I think that'll do us. The only thing else I was going to say about Hearts, it was great to see Kai Rowles back starting. And he was good. Yeah, he did get robbed at one point by Morelos, but I did think that was maybe a foul as well.
Yeah.
How have you taken to the Cammy Devlin crying at international call-up?
I nearly cried myself.
Really? Poignant moment.
That video.
Yeah.
First thing this morning. It was a bit emotional.
Such a moment.
Right, that'll do us. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you to Ewan.
You're welcome.
Thank you to Amy.
You're very welcome.
If you'd like to hear more from they two, especially Amy, then
not so much for me.
Yep, you should check out the Patreon, which is hosted by Tony Anderson, because the way we've structured this is that Tony took care of the Patreon, had took care of the main show, as we both covered for Rob's absence. And Tony hosts, I think, and asked Amy some questions, and then you talk for a while.
a long while, and Ewan just sat there, drank a lot of water.
It was about the SWPL Cup and the Scotland squad.
Yeah, the international setup, sort of what's the confusion surrounding the announcement today. But you know, look, yeah, why are you pondering? You know.
Yeah, I did know what
you
was
learnt going. An awful lot. I did. Welcome.
You're
very, very welcome now.
And that's patreon.com/testpodcast, and that will be on our £2 per month tier. Right. Thank you very much for listening and for the final weekend of Scottish Premiership action before the World Cup. I hope you enjoy your football. Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.